Welcome back to the Classic Rock Podcast for September. Coming up, as ever, we'll begin by reviewing some of the more interesting news stories of the last month. Our classic interview this month comes almost 50 years to the day. It was actually September the 7th of 1968 when Led Zeppelin, as they would become, played their very first ever live gig, albeit as the New Yardbirds. It was played in Denmark at a place called the Teen Club, which was basically a school gym. And that, remember, was just 2 weeks since they'd all gotten together for the very first time in a tiny little room under a record store in Gerrard Street in Soho for the first time. And the very first song that they played together in that room, by the way, it was called Train Kept A-Rollin'. Anyway, September the 7th of this year marked the release of the newly remastered deluxe edition of The Song Remains the Same. And we've dug up a really great archive interview of Robert Plant and Peter Grant talking about its release and life and Led Zeppelin at the time. Plus, of course, we'll have all the usual features as well, looking at what's made the music press, the vintage press review, and a few other bits and pieces if we have time to get them all into the show. Now, let's get a move on then and start by looking back at some of the more interesting news of the last month. Now, who recognizes what this is? All ends rather abruptly, but that, ladies and gentlemen, is Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones teasing what we believe to be new music. It's been quite a while. He was seen on Twitter, by the way, posting that. The last new music we heard from the Stones was back in 2012 when they released another sort of greatest hits compilation to celebrate their 50th year. And there were a couple of good tracks on there, the best of which was called Doom and Gloom. Steve Perry is back with new music, but there will be no reunion with Journey, but there may be a collaboration with Neil Sean. We don't know as yet. What about the new music? Well, all I can say, actually, is after having a listen to both of them, despite it being good to hear him back, the two songs released so far sound like tracks that maybe wouldn't have perhaps made it onto a Journey album. Despite him saying that there'll be no reunion, what he's actually delivered here are two songs that sound a bit like Journey without the rest of the band. KK Danny revealed the real reason why he walked away from Judas Priest back in 2011. They're celebrating their 50th anniversary, remember, by the way, next year. He says, well, it takes a bloody miracle, he said, for anybody to stay together 40 years. There has to be give and take. And I like to think, he said, that democracy is always the best policy. And there simply wasn't enough of it there. On getting back with the band one day, I can't foresee an opening, but if something did happen, I'd have to see how the land lies. They will be touring with Ozzy Osbourne, where they'll be playing a series of shows in the UK next early part of next year. They're currently on tour at the moment with Deep Purple. Strange pairing, that, but apparently they're doing very well indeed over in North America. Now, it's been a big month for AC/DC rumours, and there's no official word, so rumour is all that this is. But it is said that they are working on a new album of material that's been written over the years, around the time leading up to Black Ice, and it does have Malcolm Young already recorded playing rhythm guitar on every track. Now, Angus Young is said to be taking the very best of them and getting to work on them with Cliff Williams, Phil Rudd, and wait for it, Brian Johnson on vocal. You might have seen the pictures during the rounds of all three of those guys outside the recording studio having a crafty fag in Vancouver. Remains to be seen, though, if that would ever emerge as a touring entity with all the issues. Remember, Williams has already retired, and Brian Johnson, of course, had those much-reported problems with his hearing. But whatever happens, the fact that they're all back together in a room talking and working together is only very good news indeed. Stand by for UFO's final tour. It starts next year in March. It concludes in the UK. This is at the O2 at Shepherd's Bush Empire on April the 4th. It's titled Last Orders, and it is one not to miss. One of the greatest ever British rock bands. And there's been a little bit of controversy over the last few weeks with Pete Way and Michael Schenker coming out and saying, hey, you know, we're not taking part, so it isn't real. Well, it is real. Phil Mogg's still there. And I saw them a couple of years ago, and they were still a great live act. But he's going to bow out, and it'll be a great chance to see them one more time before they do. Good news for fans of Greta Van Fleet. They will deliver a debut album sometime later this year or early next. Now, they have garnered an awful lot of coverage over the last 18 months due to similarities in their sound to Led Zeppelin, which aren't entirely unfounded. But does that actually diminish from their offering? Well, the answer is absolutely not. There have been a few in the past who shamelessly tried to copy that Zeppelin sound, most notably, and hands up here to anybody that remembers a guy by the name of Lenny Wolf and his band Kingdom Come from the 1980s. They had a debut track called Get It On, and I remember it being played on radio and thinking it was a new Zeppelin album. More recently, the also vastly underrated and very excellent live band Wolfmother, some of their music had that real Zeppelin feel to it. But regardless, I saw them as well a few years ago, and they were quite superb as a live band, and really should be out a bit more doing their stuff. Now, just a couple of years after saying that was it is all over. What on earth were Nikki Sixx and Tommy Lee doing in a studio with Bob Rock? No Vince Neil or Mick Mars there. Bob Rock, remember, produced Motley Crue's biggest selling album, Dr. Feelgood. Now, speculators thought it might have something to do with the Netflix movie based on the book The Dirt, which it now transpires it did. If you've never read The Dirt, then it should be one of those books that you do read, because it will actually give you the full definition of what debauchery and drug and alcohol abuse was all about. It was a quite incredible book. Now, Christmas, of course, is only just around the corner, so maybe you could get the book, and whilst you're sat down reading it, you could have a bottle of Metallica's Blackened Whiskey, which was described in the marketing blurb as such. Housed in black brandy barrels and inundated with low hertz sound waves so intense that it enhances the molecular interaction. So there you go. Blackened Whiskey by Metallica is up for sale right now. We mentioned Judas Priest just a couple of minutes ago, but another bit of good news is that Firepower, it seems, will not be Judas Priest's final album. It's done so well that it's clear that the appetite still exists for new Priest material, and there will be some more. Now, if you're one of those who's been pining for the Black Crowes sound, well, here's a bit of good news. The Magpies Salute lined up a UK and European tour this autumn. The band, which includes the former Black Crow Rich Robinson, have a debut album out right now. It's called High Water, which is well worth a listen. Now, in keeping with this fashion these days for producing lavish box sets, the Kinks are back with this.
We are the Village Green Preservation Society. God save the old duck, Bonneville and variety. We are the Desperate Dan Appreciation Society. God save strawberry jam and all the different varieties. Preserving the old ways from being abused. Protecting the new ways for me and for you. What more can we do? We are the Draft Beer Preservation Society. God save Mrs. Moss and good old Mother Riley. We are the custard pie
appreciation consortium. God save the George Cross and all those who are loving them. Sherlock Holmes, English-speaking vernacular. Help save Fu Manchu, Moriarty and Dracula. We are the office block, persecution affinity. God save little shots, China cups and virginity. We are the skyscraper, condemnation affiliates. God save Tudor houses, anti-tables and millions. Love in the old ways, forbidding abuse. Protect in the new ways, for me and for you. What more can we do? We are the Village Green Preservation Society. God save Donald Duck, Porterville and Variety. We are the Desperate Dam Appreciation Society. God save Strawberry Jam. And all the different varieties. We are the Village Green Preservation Society. God save Donald Duck, all the little varieties. We are the Village Green Preservation Society. God save Donald Duck.
There you have it then. It is the 50th anniversary edition of the Village Green Preservation Society. It includes 5 CDs and in all 174 tracks plus interviews. There's vinyl, there's album singles, there's posters, artwork, and indeed a book. I mean, the word lavish doesn't actually begin to actually explain what is in this thing, but it weighs in at over 100 quid. So it is one for the serious collector. Let's stay with the subject of the Big 5-0, and there are so many 50th anniversaries coming up. You're going to be spoilt for choice for 50th anniversary tours and product coming out. ZZ Top, formed in Houston in 1969, and the lineup is, as it always has been, Gibbons, Hill, Beard. Billy Gibbons talking about next year has said, he said it is cause for a big celebration. We're going to be pulling out all the stops. Plus, he added with a smile, it gives us an excuse to go back and learn the stuff we're already supposed to know. Plus, there could very well be new music as well. Something to look forward to. One of the great bands, ZZ Top. Now, Roger Daltrey has been talking about he's going to choose the actor who will portray Keith Moon in the upcoming biopic. It will, he said, be very dependent on the actor's eyes. Moon had extraordinary eyes. Daltrey's biography, incidentally, by the way, is out in October. He was also reminiscing on various hijinks and antics of Keith Moon's over the years. 50 years ago it was that Moon was taken to the Miami hospital after trashing a room at the very famous Fontainebleau Hotel right on the seafront in Miami, a place that was frequented by Frank Sinatra, amongst others. Staff, he said, called the police, but by the time they arrived, he collapsed on the floor. 5 days later, from his hospital bed, he just opened his eyes and said, feel fine, don't remember much. Felt a bit dizzy. Next thing I know, I collapsed. Plenty more of those stories to come, no doubt, in Daltrey's biography. And it's a big month, isn't it, for rock-related books. The Led Zeppelin 50th anniversary book, now having orders taken. There's also a photographic history of Queen, which is released shortly, focusing on the period from 1975 until the mid-1980s. That's reviewed, actually, in this month's Classic Rock magazine. Now, we had a bit of the Kinks earlier on. Lots of talk about Kinks reunions over the past few months. On the solo front, Dave Davis is set to release an album titled Decade. Should be out now, which will be a collection of unreleased songs that were written and recorded between 1971 and 1979. The songs, he said, have been nagging at me to be recognised all these years. I hope you all will enjoy the music. I'm sure we will. Now, we never really get through a month, do we, without having to say goodbye to somebody. And that somebody this month is the former Lynyrd Skynyrd guitarist Ed King, who died a couple of weeks ago, played between 72 and 75, and again back in 1987 on The Comeback. He was also a member of the band Strawberry back in the 1960s, who had a hit, you might remember it, called Incense and Peppermints. His significant credits include co-writing the most, well, one of the most famous songs of all time, Sweet Home Alabama. Not a good month either for Dickie Betts, the former Allman Brothers band man. He's just cancelled dates due to what's been described as post-stroke repercussions. He has, though, been assured by his doctors, though, that in around 5 to 7 weeks' time, he will be fit to go again. He returned to live work this year, remember, after retiring last November, one of the shortest retirements in music history, I would have thought. Now, I wonder whether this will ever see the light of day. Following on from David Bowie's very first appearance as a vocalist being found in a bread bin in a loft, a song recorded by Mick Jagger and Carly Simon has seen the light of day. It was recorded 45 years ago. It's said to be called Fragile. It's a slow ballad with the two of them sat at a piano. It's been discovered by a Stones collector, a guy called Matt Lee, on a tape he'd had sat around for years. And Carly Simon has come out and said that it had been recorded after Jagger made that guest appearance on the track that was said to be, or rumoured to be, all about him. You know the one. You're So Vain. Now, what about a bit of potential reunion news? Genesis? Well, Phil Collins has said he would take part, but he'll only take part if his son Nick becomes their drummer. So in other words, no chance. And finally, in the news, I know we have already mentioned Christmas twice, three times already. We're going to end the news on a bit more Christmas news. 15 weeks to go and starting the firing gun of those with intentions of bringing you some Yuletide cheer into their homes via the release of Christmas albums is Eric Clapton. He's going to release a Christmas album. He said, I've had it in my head. These songs could be done with a blues twinge. He said, I can't wait to release it. He's produced the record, because it's already done, with Simon Climie. Remember him and Climie Fish in the 1980s. Very accomplished producer. And it's all the usual songs, White Christmas included. We ought to do a Christmas special with homage to the best Christmas albums ever done. Remember Bob Dylan's Christmas in the Heart? It's enough to turn your eggnog. And so to the classic interview. September the 7th was another Led Zeppelin celebration day, and in the year of their 50th anniversary, the final offering in the newly remastered series is the deluxe version of the 1976 concert film soundtrack, The Song Remains the Same, produced by Jimmy Page, as ever, and it covers the band's shows from Madison Square Garden between July 27 and 29 of 1973, and it comes 42 years after its first release. Now, as ever, you'll get a multitude of formats, all of them put together with fabulous detail. Now, the one major change is the inclusion of the full 29-minute version of Dazed and Confused, which on the LP version takes up an entire side. And so then, to mark the moment, our classic interview this month comes from 1976, when Peter Grant and Robert Plant talked about the release of The Song Remains the Same.
Well, at last it's happening. The Led Zeppelin film is going to appear before our very eyes. The rumours seem to have been flying around for me for years. How long, in fact, is it since you started making it?
I think the evening in question was in July 1973.
So that's what? 3 years ago?
Yeah, just gone.
That's quite a long time. What was the hold-up? What caused the delay in between? I know it's a complex film, there's a lot in it, but it's quite a long time, years.
Well, there wasn't any hold-up in the concert part of it. And there hasn't been any hold-up. I mean, the time between 73 or the end of July 73 when it was filmed at Madison Square Garden, the concert part, the rest has been taken up by doing all the fantasy and offstage parts. That's yeah. where it is.
In effect, it was finished just at this side of last Christmas. But to get up to that point, if you really want to look at the thing in the best light, then like an album, as the time it took with Physical Graffiti, you can't really spend, you know, countless hours going through reel upon reel of tape, our film rather. So we just approached it when we were, you know, just kept the freshness there.
It was the same attitude as I would take with an album. To get it as near perfect as possible. That's yeah. why.
Although it was done 3 years ago, and obviously didn't have anything from Physical Graffiti and all from Presence, I didn't feel that I was looking at an old concert. I mean, it looked like a contemporary concert to me. Do you tend to use much of Physical Graffiti and Presence now? Were you with Presence, and did you with Physical Graffiti?
Yes, we haven't had an opportunity with Presence yet. There are a couple of things that I think that we'll work on, but... with Graffiti, if you came to Earl's Court, or if any of the 90-odd thousand folk who did, would know that we included a fair portion of a Physical Graffiti, you know? But I think the vibe has changed just slightly, but the excitement is still maintained.
I've been trying to think of a word to describe the film for somebody who hasn't seen it. Rock fantasy isn't really an adequate word. I don't like it very much, and I'm sure you don't. How would you actually describe the film to somebody who knows nothing about it but knows about
it? It isn't rock fantasy. I think the main thing was to get over the fact that it just wasn't a film of a concert. I mean, there's been lots of sort of... Well, not lots, but there's been quite a few films that have just been concerts on the stage, and we wanted to get beyond that.
Yeah, if we're going to be self-indulgent, we might as well try and expand our indulgence a little bit, you know?
I mean, the self-indulgence being the fantasy sections. Were you each individually in charge of your own sequence of fantasy? Were you totally in charge?
It had to be total control, because really you worked out... or you planned out how you would like, in my own case, how I really saw... what I was doing. On another level altogether, you know, the journey, the fact that there are pitfalls and there are trials, tribulations and elations, and the end should never ever be in sight.
So they were entirely their own, you know, their own individual ideas. For instance, with Robert, like when Robert did his stuff in Wales, the other members of the group were not there. You know,
and the same and refused Jimmy. To pay for it at all.
And well, we have plans for that later, actually. Wait to see his next royalty statement. Oh, I forgot, he doesn't get me.
How did you work with the director? Presumably, you had a lot of ideas. Obviously, you did in your fantasy sequences. Presumably, you did for the stuff on stage. How did you actually work with him? How much were you in charge, and how much was he in charge? Or was it a cooperative?
They were totally in charge. The artistic thing of how Robert wanted, or Jimmy, or Triple Jones, or John Bonham wanted to see. They had a picture in their mind of what they wanted to see. That was a matter of having the director shoot what was in their mind, you know? In being a craftsman, technician, mechanic, whatever you'd like to say.
And then it was up to... Well, so long as he did that, then it was up to us afterwards to sort of get together and correlate with him and say, right, now this should be illuminated. Now this is where you've got to really pull, you know, this is where you've got to do your stuff, you know, because we know exactly what part, having lived with it forever and conceived it, we know exactly what parts need highlighting and he was, in a way, working somewhat in the dark, although he could see that there was a picture and there was substance there, you know? I mean, we knew what parts had to be highlighted. And so we had to work constantly.
Did you script it for him, or
no.
did you do
oh,
it
no.
by word of mouth? I mean, did you sort of discuss it and say, well, we'll do this?
No, it all started in the Sheraton Hotel in Boston. And everybody's sitting around talking about a film which we talked about some time. A group had talked about it. And somebody said, why don't we make a film, G? So I said, yeah, that's not an idea. Picked the phone up. called London and...
rented the Sharks?
Yes, and over they came. It was just like that, you know, it was straight in at the deep end, really. But it worked.
I think it worked very well. I liked the film very much. The one section that I had a slight reservation about was the theft from the hotel sequence, which somehow seemed to lift it out of a rock concert and a fantasy combination into a sort of documentary. But I suppose, in a way, maybe the rock concert was a documentary and that it happened all on the one day.
Well, the robbery scene could have been a lot heavier, but it could have been a lot heavier, yeah. Been another dollar in the same.
Right, yeah.
Could have been a lot less robbed.
No, the thing is that the robbery did happen at the time of the concert. It was a part of that time, that capture, whatever you like to call it, and that's why we just folded it in gently. It's not very blatant. I mean, did you find it blatant?
Well, you see, I did actually find it rather blatant, but not only did I find it slightly away from the feeling of the rest of the film, but it was also in black and white, which accentuated its difference.
Yes, but it was newsreel, it was actual TV
newsreel.
Yeah, it was,
but somehow, I don't know, it just seemed to me like a wart.
I tell you what, if you walk upstage and find out that $203,000 have gone up the spout...
If I walk upstage and have that, I should just be happy.
It'd be pretty relevant, but... it was a day in July, really. Yeah. We tried to find a title that would signify the fact that it was
wasn't it?
A day in July might have been a good title. A bit late in the day to change it.
Robert, why did you make the film in the first place?
Well, I wouldn't like to think that vanity crept in, but it's rather frustrating spending now it's a total of about 8.5 years of playing on stage, and I think the closest we've ever got of seeing ourselves is having a sly peep at the video screen at Earl's Court, you know? So initially, if it ran to no more than just, you know, turning ourselves on, or at least having a look to see what people came for, you know? That was the initial, idea. And from there on, we just wanted to capture one moment in time, you know? I mean, it was... Now it's got to the point it was a while back. The time may come again when we reach a point that we say, right, you know, let's have a go at this one, let's see how this looks. You know?
It's ironical to me as a television producer that it's taken an extract from a commercial cinema film to bring Led Zeppelin back in performance state, back in onto the small screen. Well, you obviously have persevered with a positive line of not appearing on television anywhere in the world, I believe. Why have you particularly done that?
That's the only way we could line you up to get any decent time on Old Grey, wasn't it?
But really, I mean, do you feel that television is too limited?
Yes.
In what area?
Well, particularly in sound. With respect, I don't think they have the facilities to record the sound. And in some way, you just cannot capture the magic of Zeppelin. Magic is a much bandied word, I know, but you just can't. That's why I've always been against doing it.
Well, I must say, television loudspeakers do have certain limitations.
Yeah. To me, to put it in words, I don't know, but it's... I just don't see it working. It doesn't work for Led Zeppelin.
Well, obviously, the major problem for a band is sound, of course it is.
Yeah. I can give you an example. In Earl's Court, if any people saw Earl's Court, people that went to Earl's Court was around, 90-odd thousand.
Yeah.
You know, now then, I think it worked really well myself, the big screen at the back. It looked super. You know, people got really close-up things. Now, I have that whole thing on cassette. And I put it on a 25-inch screen at home. Nothing. Yeah. It doesn't work.
What have you done about the cinemas you're going into? Have you done anything special about the sound there?
Oh, yeah, we've been very careful on the cinemas.
I think there are certain cinemas that can accommodate the four-track stereo that the film is presented in initially. And I should imagine that other cinemas in strategic points can be equipped with the right equipment, so
we can do exactly
what we started out doing, you know?
Yeah.
Well, to take it that distributors fall in love with and push it up and down the country all over the place, will this affect live gigs and touring?
No.
No way.
I mean, you would currently tour at the same time as the film is showing?
Well, not immediately it comes out.
No, but I mean, if it was still showing around the country, that wouldn't influence
you? I mean, we'd find John Paul Jones in time, you know, maybe.
Well, thanks very much for coming along and chatting to us. Maybe great. In 5 years' time, we'll see it bought up in a package and shown on BBC as a television special.
Actually, I didn't let them have the television rights.
Guesses. Foiled again.
Thanks
very much indeed, Robert.
All right, great.
Get well soon, Bob.
Yes.
He's lost his voice.
The get well soon message there was in reference to Whispering Bob Harris, who, of course, was the man who fronted the old grey whistle test, and he was supposed to be conducting that interview, but he was ill. He'd lost his voice. Time now, then, to round up what's been making the music press over the last month or so. Now, Slash is front cover of Classic Rock magazine this month, and inside, loads of good stuff, as ever. Randy Bachman talking about his new album, By George, by Bachman, which is a selection of covers of George Harrison songs with new material chucked in there as well. Why is it these interviews always end up with that questioner at the end of them? How long can you continue? Should be banned. Anybody who is asking that or seem to be asking that to anybody who's in the rock and roll community should be immediately fired from their job. Anyway, he said, I've played, with my back out of place in three places, my knees broken, flu, concussion, I've got a pacemaker. 3 years ago on stage with Smokey Robinson, the batteries went out. In other words, I survived that. So you know what? I feel I can survive anything. Now, the always good for general entertainment, Rick Wakeman, who gives us an update on his bowels. Now, those of you who follow him on Twitter will understand exactly where I'm coming from on this. And Rick, we are so glad that they are working well. Now on to Slash, and as they point out, nobody has done an interview with anybody from Guns N' Roses since they went back together and went out on basically what is now the fourth biggest earning tour of all time. And so he is in print, and they have been talking about what it was like when he and Axel first spoke on the phone before meeting up and agreeing to perform at Coachella, the tour, the new album with Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators. And did they make their first announcement that a new Guns N' Roses album is being written? I think, he said, everybody thinks it's a good idea and everybody would like to do it. There's no shortage of ideas. And that's as far as we got. Moving on, Paul McCartney. Actually, a slightly weird-looking Paul McCartney, it has to be said, on the front cover of Mojo this month. And inside, a veritable trove of treasures. Ian Hunter, in his own words, on his vices. I like a drop of champ, as he said. Been on the rider for years. Nothing about single-coloured M&Ms, though. His biggest regret was simply that he didn't mature sooner. I was a bit of a wild ass, he said. I had over 40 jobs in the 1960s, living in lodgings for £3 a week, out with the chaps every night of the week, and I got lyrics out of it. And how would he like to be remembered? That ginger bloke with the glasses. And long before the last 20 years of rock stars have had their, in some cases, excruciating memoirs written, he was well ahead of his time in writing his very own Diary of a Rock and Roll Star. Now, an updated version of that is coming out on October the 11th. Remember, that was written in the 1970s when Ian Hunter was at the peak of his fame with Mott the Hoople. Also appearing in print is the famed producer Nile Rodgers, and his is quite a story, beginning with the fact that both of his parents were heroin addicts, to actually working at LA Airport, where, believe it or not, he used to clean Frank Sinatra's plane, and on to the night where he and then-girlfriend went out to see this funny British band by the name of Roxy Music. He said it blew me away. Went on to Chic, of course. Now, if you think Led Zeppelin of the darlings of Atlantic Records, well, Chic had the biggest selling single in the history of Atlantic Records. And as Nile Rodgers tells it, the label told us it sucked. They didn't pay any attention, of course, to those twitterings of executives that knew nothing. They simply released that song called Le Freak. And the rest is, of course, history. And, of course, as a producer, he went on to work with everybody from Diana Ross on her biggest ever-selling album, Aretha Franklin as well, Daft Punk as well, only a couple of years ago. Also in this edition, Marianne Faithfull has been diarising some of the time building up to the release of her 21st album. And then that main feature on Paul McCartney discussing his new album, Egypt Station. And of course, yes, that inevitable question. You're a 76-year-old about to tour the world again. Do you entertain thoughts of retirement? To which even he had to say, well, yes, but here's the caveat. We love playing and we happen to be good at it. Over to the reviews section, getting the 4-star treatment, The Doors, Waiting for the Sun, and Led Zeppelin's reissue of The Song Remains the Same, where Mark Blake concludes his review by saying, the telepathy between all parties, especially on Since I've Been Loving You and No Quarter, remains as astonishing now as it was on the original double live album. Now, on the magazine front, it's always good to find new and interesting items on the shelves. Long Live Vinyl is, as it says, a magazine for vinyl lovers and enthusiasts. And Jimi Hendrix makes the front cover of this month's edition. It's a great magazine, this, full of really interesting vinyl reviews, new issues and interviews. The Story of the Sleeve looks at Massive Attack's mezzanine. And your most valuable vinyl section, where prices sit next to albums that you may actually have. And if you do happen to have Jimi Hendrix's Band of Gypsies, then you're potentially sitting on £300. The Kinks are featured with the newly remastered Village Green Preservation Society luxury box set, which I think we've already mentioned weighs in at a hefty £108, but still gets a great review. Back to Jimi Hendrix. And it's a full-on feature, including a look at Hendrix's own record collection, which is currently on show at the Handel and Hendrix exhibition in London, where they've actually recreated Jimmy's bedroom from the third-floor flat at 23 Brook Street, London, where he lived in 1968. And they've made, I have to say, an amazing job of that as well. And off goes one of the journos to Nottingham to seek out all of the interesting vinyl record stores. And there are many, it seems. I could go on, but you'll have to actually buy the magazine. It's a very good addition, actually, to the shelves, and we'll be keeping an eye on that over the coming months. Now, just before we actually leave the magazine review, arriving hot off the presses, it is the October edition of classic rock, which has got a Led Zeppelin Happy 50th front cover, and inside about 16 pages reviewing albums, songs, great photography, interviews and quotes. Also, there's the story behind the song this month. Is Steppenwolf's Born to be Wild, with so many iconic songs that went on to become soundtracks to a generation. It was turned down as well by a few before the final crafting into the song that it became. And guess what? It celebrates its 50th anniversary this summer as well. More 50th anniversary celebrations as well, as we meet up with the band and the singer who many believe should have been the one who took over from Bon Scott in AC/DC, Dan McCafferty and Nazareth. They talk about new albums. They've got a new album out and a very expansive box set as well. And from legends past to potential legends of the future, the Struts, perhaps not known by many of you, but on the eve of their second album being released, and the first one was very good as well, by the way, they're perhaps one of the most important rock bands of the last decade, in a time where the Metallicas, Maidens, and Leopards, etc., well into their 50s and 60s. Rock music has been crying out for something new, fresh, vibrant, with attitude and music to go with the image. And these guys could very well be it. And for those of you who've never heard them, have a listen to this.
Your eyes follow like a spotlight, two eyes like the sun. Go ahead, keep your distance from me. Soon you're gonna come. When you flick your hair like you don't care and you're asking where I'm from. That game that you're running, baby, you've already won. I need to know, no, no. What do you need, need, need? What do you like, like? 'Cause I'm gonna be it tonight. You can be cool, you can be shy. Say what you want, say what you like. 'Cause ooh, your body talks, your body talks. Ooh, ooh, your body talks. You can pretend you don't wanna know, but I need the sounds of your head to your toes. That face is a song. If it's my imagination, stop me if I'm wrong. I need to know, know, know. What do ya need, need, need? What do ya like, like? 'Cause I'm gonna be it tonight. You can be cool, you can be shy. Say what you want, say what you like. 'Cause ooh, your body talks, your body talks. Ooh, ooh, your body talks. You can pretend.
There you go. That is the Struts, a band that look as if they are on the cusp of making it very, very big indeed. They're over in the USA at the moment, kicking off quite a lengthy tour over there. If they're going to your town, then do get in touch and let us know what you thought about them. And now it is time for the classic rock rewind. We're going back 13 years. Bon Scott was front cover. Hero, icon, legend, the truth, it says, about his death. What else was going on? Motley Crue were back with the original lineup. It was announced at the Hollywood Palladium as the original band sat in the same place, in the same room for the very first time in 6 years. And off they went then for an 11-year run. They have finally retired, but who knows, down the line, out of all the bands that have retired, you wouldn't back against them reappearing somewhere down the line, even if it's only for a one-off show. Now, this issue also paid tribute to Pantera guitarist Dimebag, who was shot dead on stage by a fan in Columbus, Ohio. Now, this was a great, great story. 25 years after Pink Floyd had a number one hit with Another Brick in the Wall, the 23 school children who sang the controversial lyrics beginning, "We don't need no education," were suing Pink Floyd for full royalties. Now, as the story goes, Bob Ezrin, who of course has been most recently reinvigorating Deep Purple as producer, he was actually producing the album, and he got the kids from Islington Green School, North London, to come in when Pink Floyd actually refused to return to the studio to finish the track for a single. Now, the school's music teacher was a guy called Alan Renshaw, who brought the kids in without the headmistress' consent. You can see where this is going, can't you? All a bit school of rock, but the rest is history, of course. The Inner London Education Authority, as they were known at the time, described it as scandalous. The school and the children were banned from appearing on Top of the Pops. The school later accepted a cheque, wait for it, for £1,000, and a platinum disc. The children, it appears, got absolutely nothing. Now, I'm just wondering if any of those kids were actually influenced by a program that went out on Channel 4. It was the year that Gene Simmons took 13 classical music pupils on Rock School and molded them into a band to perform a support slot at the Hammersmith Odeon. Simmons, incidentally, was once a school teacher who famously got fired after he replaced the pupils' Shakespeare texts in English literature with Spider-Man comics. Brilliant. Also causing more than a few raised eyebrows was the news that Paul Rodgers, the voice of rock for many people, was joining Queen. Paul was one of Freddie's favourite singers, said Roger Taylor, and they did the album This Cosmos Rocks, which wasn't that bad and tends to be overlooked these days, which is a shame because the combination of Paul Rodgers and the guys from Queen did actually produce a solid album. Now, try and keep a straight face. Tommy Lee had released a book. This, remember, was at a time when we'd not long since had the book The Dirt, and just before we'd had The Heroin Diaries by Nikki Sixx. This was actually so bad that it was actually quite amusing. So they concentrated on Tommy's tips for girls, how to be a success with them. He says that big girls equal big yummy time, and Tommy is against any discrimination here. That was followed by do it in the car whilst driving, and I quote, please be careful and don't hit the cruise control button. How to get the most from a threesome. And I'll leave you with this, Peach. Just when you think that it couldn't sink any lower, there was an entire chapter titled The Art of Going South. And all I will add to that is, remember the alphabet. So the main story of this issue surrounded the death 25 years previously this month of Bon Scott, an event which even today, some believe, remains shrouded with too many mysteries. And in this issue, Jeff Barton investigated Bon's last hours, beginning with a trip to East Dulwich, 67 Overhill Road to be exact, as it was outside this address that his body was found abandoned in a Renault 5. So they relive those events of February the 18th, 1980, when he'd gone out with a guy called Alistair Kinnear. And after a heavy night on the drink, he allegedly couldn't awaken him, so he left him in the car to sleep, only to return the following day to find him dead. Now, the coroner's report stated death due to acute alcoholic poisoning. Now, Kinnear, incidentally, at the time of this article which they'd written, said disappeared pretty much soon after, was never heard of again up until at that point. So you can see why the mystery remained. Interviews and quotes, well, there were a great many of those as well. As for good stories, the AC/DC manager between 74 and 79, a guy called Michael Browning, relays the one about the time that Bon had two girlfriends actually in the maternity unit of the same hospital at the same time, and neither was aware of the other's existence. Then we went off into detail, an interview with Paul Chapman and Pete Way, of course, formerly of UFO, about a man that they knew very well. They talk about his final days, and Chapman said that I can never, ever remember seeing him put anything up his nose or take anything that he shouldn't have been taking, but he did drink like a wild man. He said, I remember once seeing him actually drink aftershave. They concluded the piece by trying to get a few answers to some questions. They approached East Dulwich Police Station. They were then referred to the Metropolitan Police Press Bureau. The response from there, no information available, they said. It was a non-suspicious death. They then spoke to the Southwark Coroner's Courts, and they actually asked for access to the records of the time. They were actually told to put it in writing, which they did, and they were then refused. So the big question, they said, was, who was Alistair Kinnear? Where is he now? It's a story full of conspiracy theories, And the only thing that's guaranteed to happen is that as the years go by, the conspiracy will only grow rather than shrink. Well, after all that, we should at least, I think, pay our respects to the man who was once voted as the greatest frontman of a rock band ever, Bon Scott of AC/DC. And this is Ride On.
It's another lonely evening in another lonely town, but I ain't too young to worry, and I ain't too old to cry when a woman gets me down. Got another empty bottle. In another empty bed. Ain't too young to admit it. No, I'm not too old to lie. I'm just another empty head. That's why I'm lonely.
Thank you.
That just about wraps it up then for this month. Hope you've enjoyed the podcast, and we will return again in a month's time with more of the same. So thanks again for listening in. From me, Tim Capel. Till next time. Bye-bye.